At this moment, British and European Union officials are talking about how exactly the UK extracts itself from Europe. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Negotiators from Brussels and London are coming up on the two-hour mark in the first session to work out just how the UK leaves the EU, a key issue causing heartache across all the countries involved. What to do about Europeans living in the UK and British people living elsewhere in the EU? BBC economics correspondent Andrew Walker is following this.
We're talking about 3 million people living here in the UK who are nationals of other EU countries and 1 million or so Brits living elsewhere in the EU. Under the current rules, you are entitled to live and work in other EU member states. I've got some direct personal exposure to this in that my wife is one of those foreign nationals living here. She's a Finn. And then in the case of the UK, there are also quite a lot of people who have retired in addition to those working, especially in Spain. Both sides say they want to preserve the rights of the people who have already made this kind of move. There are also issues about access to public services. So there's a lot to talk about.
There's the issue of the UK-Ireland border, but also the divorce bill. The Europeans think the UK owes it some serious money if it's going to leave.
That's right. And this is partly because the EU does its budget planning over a 7-year period. And the current budget is based on commitments that the UK government signed up to. And so the EU would argue that we are liable for what will be a couple of years of extra spending and commitments after the date on which we think Brexit is going to happen. So again, there is plenty to talk about. And this one is politically very, very charged, especially when you look at the fact that the higher end of the figures that have been suggested is as high as something in excess of $100 billion.
The BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Marking X for gender on an official government ID is about to become a thing in the United States. In less than 2 weeks, July 1, Oregon will be the first state in the nation to let residents list their sex on a driver's license or state ID card as female, male, or X for not specified. From Portland, Oregon, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
I was surprised to see how few of my IDs list gender, not my social security or insurance cards, just my passport and driver's license. But those are big when it comes to, say, getting past TSA agents at the airport. David House with the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles says TSA knows about the new state IDs, though
we cannot guarantee what other agencies do.
And he says problems could come up, say if a person's new X gender mark doesn't match the male or female that a financial institution or government agency already has on file.
If you go into a bank, the bank may still say, well, we want one more piece of ID.
Diane Goodwin with the LGBT advocacy group Basic Rights Oregon applauds the new policy, but predicts there'll be some uncertainty for early adopters.
Will they be able to get credit cards? Will they have issues with health insurance?
California lawmakers have proposed adding a new non-binary gender choice on state IDs. The option's already available in the Canadian province of Ontario. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Let us do the numbers here. The 100 share index in London is up 0.6%. Dow and S&P futures are up 0.3%. NASDAQ future up 0.6%. The benchmark bond is up with the 10-year Treasury yield down at 2.14%. If the driver of, say, a Lamborghini gets pulled over, they can laugh off a $200 fine, but it may be no laughing matter for a person struggling to make ends meet. Well, the California legislature is considering a proposal to link the cost of a traffic ticket to a person's ability to pay. From Los Angeles, Larry Boole reports.
California has some of the country's harshest penalties for minor traffic violations. Thanks to a host of automatic surcharges, a $100 ticket actually starts out at $490. Then late fees can pile on. Failure to pay on time raises the price to $800, and then $1,100, and so on. Paul Tepper is executive director of the Western Center on Law and Poverty. He explains how a ticket for, say, not signaling, can start a person on a downward spiral.
If you can't pay the ticket, courts commonly suspend your license. Without a license, people can't go to work and frequently lose their jobs. If they're not working, they can't pay their ticket.
A bill that passed the California Senate recently lets judges drastically reduce fines for people earning up to 250% of the federal poverty level. That's about $30,000 a year for a single person. And it offers them payment plans to keep their licenses. The proposal covers minor moving violations, and it doesn't let truly bad drivers off the hook. Penalties for DUI or reckless driving are not affected. Senators who voted against the bill did not respond to a request for comment, but critics say that ending automatic license suspension might make it less likely violators will pay. The bill's author, Senator Bob Hertzberg, says people were actually more likely to pay under a recent two-year traffic amnesty that ended in April.
We got 250,000 people in California who got their licenses back, and the government got money that otherwise wouldn't have.
And when drivers keep their licenses and their jobs, the state collects more income taxes and pays out less in unemployment. Donald Shoup, a research professor of urban planning at UCLA, says the bill is about giving low-income Californians a break.
It's just bringing traffic fines more into line with everything else we do about helping poor people.
Governor Jerry Brown says suspended licenses and sky-high penalties can send people into a hellhole of desperation. He supports the change. In Los Angeles, I'm Larry Buell for Marketplace.
And America has led the world in computer technology, so how come the U.S. government's computer systems sometimes look like they're right out of the 1964 Cold War movie Failsafe? Well, leading technology executives, including Amazon's Jeff Bezos, Apple's Tim Cook, and Microsoft's Satya Nadella, are headed to the White House today for a chat about an upgrade. It's the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.